listening to the Dreaming of Freedom podcast on the 2 Cents FC Network.
All right, welcome back to the Dreaming of Freedom podcast, where we talk about all things black soccer and MLS. I'm Jermaine.
I'm Callie.
And I'm AD.
And we are members of Black Herons United, an independent black supporters group for Inter Miami and all things black soccer in South Florida.
For episode 19, it's an African affair. We'll be covering match days 22 and 23, giving you our dream team selection featuring Dom Baji, Bongi Luangwane, and Frank Boley. While our footnotes segment will focus on the history of African footballers in U.S. soccer. So stay tuned to catch it all.
All right. So how y'all doing? AD, how you doing, sir?
I'm all right.
Good.
How about you?
Callie? I'm good, bro. I'm kind of a little on edge right now because I know Callie wants to drop some serious bombs on the Supreme Court in the spirit of July 4th. I guess we have to come hard on the highest law of the land. Callie, what you got?
Yeah, I'm mad, man. Like that's the only way to put it, and it's hard not to almost get emotional about it. It's hard not to look at some of the things that the highest court of the land have kind of written into the law of the land now. And there's two cases in particular that are really upsetting. And it feels like we've had a lot, right? And we can go in on the student loans thing. We can go in on a whole plethora of issues of that just highlight the importance of voting, the importance of elections, the importance of a democratic system, and why, maybe voting in a guy just because he speaks well or he's rich or whatever the case is probably not the best idea, because the result of that has been judges who are not there to serve the law of the land and who are not there to serve the people. They are there to serve themselves. They are there to serve their own interests. And it's hard not to get angry. And I try my best to overlook things, and I try my best not to get too tied up. But when it affects the people that mean the most to me in my life is when it really starts to dig in my core. The first one I'll touch on is the Supreme Court has ruled that expressive businesses, so think, bakers, website designers, things like that, creatives basically can legally not serve people in the LGBTQIA+ community on the grounds of religion or whatever, which on one hand you can read and say like, oh, well, business has a right to serve who they want to serve, right? Which I think everyone can kind of get on board with. But to take it a step further and say that a group of people can be legally not served or not catered to, and that is the law of the land, we are kind of regressing into Jim Crow-esque laws. And I hate to take things to extremes, but this is where we're at. And the weirdest part about this entire case is that there was nothing that the person who initially filed the case is this web designer that she decided that she did not want to make websites for gay people. The thing is, a gay person has never approached her to make a website, ever. It was never a thing that happened. And even the person referred to in the filing was reached out to by the courts. He had to testify. And he says, I have no idea why I'm a part of this. One, I'm a web designer myself. So if I wanted to design a website, I can do that myself. And two, I never reached out to her for her business. I had no idea who this person was. And I found out about all this because my name came up in a Supreme Court filing. So addressing boogeymen that don't exist, that if someone came up to her and said, hey, I'm gay, I want you to make a website, she could have just said no and people would have gone on their way. So to put people in a position where they can legally turn people down just because of who they are, I mean, you go back into the 50s through the pre-Civil War days, even all the way back into the Reconstruction where black people were living in the Jim Crow South. You know, black people weren't slaves, but they still lived by the black codes. They still weren't given jobs. They still weren't given opportunities. They were still, you know, with this at that time, 250 year backseat to white people in terms of economic prosperity. And now we're kind of seeing shades of that again. You know, and it's something that black people in this country have experienced since, you know, they were first brought here in the 1600s or so. And now we're seeing this carry over to another marginalized group who've gone through it, and especially in certain states. And it's upsetting. It's really upsetting. And my heart breaks for the LGBTQIA community. I know Dreaming of Freedom, Two Cents, Black Herons, we are here for you. You have a home here. You have a safe space here. But that's one. The next one is the Supreme Court has ruled to end affirmative action in the admissions process for colleges and universities. And again, if you read things on a surface level, and I've seen this conversation being had, they said, okay, well, now it's an equal playing field. Now people just get in based on their merit, based on their achievements in academica, in academics. And again, people just glancing over something and almost get behind that. Like, yeah, let's stop looking at names and race on an application and start admitting beyond that. But that's not what's happening. Okay, because I'll start with this. Public schools are funded through property taxes, right? So rich white neighborhoods are going to have kids going to better funded schools, fully staffed schools, and kids in inner cities and those type of places, again, funded off property taxes, you know, in neighborhoods, predominantly black and brown neighborhoods, are in schools with lower property value, which is done on purpose, has been done on purpose for decades by way of gerrymandering, redlining, all that fun stuff that we can get into, but I won't do that today, are in lesser funded schools, lesser staff schools, and they're not receiving the same type of resources that every school is. So if you're going to do that, are you going to fund all schools the same? I don't think so, because that's communism and everyone's afraid of that. That's socialism and everyone's afraid of that. All right. And beyond that, this ruling, you know what it doesn't stop? It doesn't stop legacy admissions from getting into schools, maybe when they don't deserve it. It doesn't stop the kids of boosters who are donating millions of dollars to the school from getting in, even though they may not deserve it. And what's one of the most disheartening things is that, you know, for those of you that don't know, I'm in education. All right, I've worked in schools that have served inner cities, and I see how some kids depend on their lives are so much bigger than what happens in a classroom, and people just see an application and they say, "Man, this kid had a 2.7 GPA, didn't do great on test scores, but you know what? They're relying on their one meal a day with that free lunch in school." And after that, they had to go work, you know, to try and support their families. You know, they had maybe one parent in a household and they're trying to support younger kids. And then we get concerned that like, oh, but why are these kids in the streets? Why are they doing this and that? Like, well, what people don't understand is that a lot of them don't have a choice. So now what you're doing is you're taking away the only advantage they have over rich white kids. And you're throwing it off to the side for what? And what's upsetting, the biggest proponent on the Supreme Court that since he sat in that chair, his biggest goal was to eliminate affirmative action. And he said that. That's come out of his mouth. And he's a black man. Clarence Thomas, who took the seat of Thurgood Marshall, who was one of the greater Supreme Court justices that we've had. And this is a man that came from nothing. Clarence Thomas came from nothing, from a small town of a couple hundred people in Georgia, you know, who's always much smarter than everybody else, grew up with nothing. You know, his mom had to leave him with his grandparents because she couldn't afford to take care of him. And, you know, he went. So what's crazy is out of high school, he went into seminary to become a minister. And his goal was to be the first black minister in the city he's from. And he left seminary because when Martin Luther King was assassinated, his classmates in seminary were cheering the fact that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. So he left. And he ended up at Sacred Heart or Holy Cross University, excuse me, in the Northeast, in the New England area. In his dorm room, he had a poster of Malcolm X. He was a leader of the Black Panthers group on campus. He led protests. He's won protests. He led a protest that basically all the black students were going to walk out, and the school folded and they said, I'm, you know, well, fine, you guys win, whatever. But he won. And then he went to law school and he tried to become a civil rights attorney, and he was upset because he wasn't making a ton of money, and he believed very strongly in dating within their race. And then something happened. He decided that he was going to take a job with this big time law firm in Atlanta, right? And he started feeling money for the first time. And the poster of Malcolm X that he had in his apartment that went with him through college, that was now in his home in Georgia, he replaced it with a poster of a Rolls Royce. And he's just got this taste of money. And he kept on going up through these ranks. And, you know, he'd identified as this liberal person for a long time, but it seemed as the account grew, his views started to change. And he became this, there's stories of him being in his legal office, and white people would comment like, man, you're the most conservative guy in here. He started reading on capitalism, on money, listening to people like Thomas Sowell and stuff that didn't believe that racism was a thing, that racism was a myth because that you know, was created to, you know, to keep black people down. And he made this full 180. So he made it his purpose at this point to just become as wealthy as possible. And I can go on and on about the biography of Clarence Thomas, because I promise you it's a man I've read a lot about, because he's a bit of an enigma to me. He went from marching with Black Panthers in college, leading riots and protests in the name of racial equality, to sharing meals with actual Nazis. He sold the home that his mother lives in to a man who was an actual, not Nazi in the way that we talk about on Twitter, that he's a guy that I don't like, so he's a Nazi. This man has a Nazi paraphernalia in his house. Armbands from Nazi officers proudly displayed. Sold his mother's house to that man. Received gifts from him. Received gifts from corporate alt-right groups that have had filings that have fallen at his desk. And he believes that affirmative action eliminating that is evening the playing field. And a man that it baffles me that a man that has gone through all that, came from nothing, stared racism in the face, can get to a point that I'm gonna go ahead and push these agendas of the very ones who would want me killed if I didn't think like them. To people who don't think I exist, people who don't think that Black Lives Matter, that yearn for this pre-civil rights America, this patriarchal, racist, and quite frankly fascist America that they crave, all in the name of the dollar. So I go on this tirade and I say all this to say that elections do matter and elections have consequences. And if we sit idly by and continue allowing things like this to happen, we are going to continue to suffer as a nation. We're not going to see our Black and brown brothers and sisters and non-binary get to where they need to be as prosperous as white people who have a 400-year advantage in this country. We're going to revert to a place where we're seeing our gay and queer and trans people in our lives burnt at the stake because they believe life operates a little differently than others. So I'm going to use this opportunity to encourage you to fight back, encourage you to raise your voice. And even though it's hard and even though it's scary, and I can say this on my end, people don't agree with you. People in your life don't agree with you. I grew up in a very Christian, conservative, Cuban, prototypical Miami home. People in my family that still very much hold dear to those values. And I know when I speak like this, it rubs them the wrong way. And they wonder what happened to Cali. But I cannot sit idly by while the people I love the most, while kids I love the most, are hurt by policies that they didn't choose, by politicians that they didn't choose, by Supreme Court justices that get to run rampant without consequences. And they have that seat for life because that's what the Constitution allows. I can't see them continue to get hurt. So I'll continue to fight and I'll be loud and I'll be vocal. And what's kind of fucked up is that in all of this, I am a white passing Hispanic man, and I can lean into that white privilege if I wanted to. And it's something that I'm very aware I can always turn back and run to. And it avails me to things that I have personally never experienced. And I know it's something that I need to check myself ever so often. So I say this as someone who is trying to make an active choice to leave those things behind me and fight alongside, you know, the Two Cents Network, AD, Jermaine, Black Herons, everybody. You know, I'm rolling with you guys, man. And I will not sit back and let people I love continue to experience this. It's unacceptable.
Hey, Cali, man, we gonna start calling you the new John Brown, boy. We appreciate everything that you do. We always appreciate your awareness and your vulnerability. You know, when you come on the show and start dropping these gems. So thank you for that. And you know, it's obviously, you know, the bullshit is obviously not limited to the federal government, right? The national scale. We also see in Florida, right, where we are now. You know, the same bullshit is going on, right? So on July 1st, a number of different conservative laws and policies passed by DeSantis went into effect. Namely, I'm just gonna talk about two of them quickly. One of them, of course, is HB 543, which allows Floridians to carry guns without a concealed weapons license. So it's basically the Wild Wild West out here. You know, it's joining the ranks of a number of other states that have these type of policies. So be careful out there, folks. Be careful out there. Florida is not the tropical paradise that it's always marketed as. So yeah, and then the other policy or the other law that just went into effect on July 1st was SB 266, which prohibits colleges and universities from spending money on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. So, you know, DeSantis, or as his critics like to call him, Death Santis, is just out here doing whatever the hell he wants to do. He is attacking every part of progressive society, whether it's LGBTQ rights, whether it's, you know, of course, learning African American history in schools, right? Learning kind of a counter history, learning the true history of the U.S. In schools. And now we see it in higher education, where these DEI initiatives are being attacked. And we feel like, you know, I'm, you know, similar to Cali, I'm also in education, and it just feels like he's getting closer and closer to just, you know, launching an all out attack on Black history, Black studies, just straight up banning it from universities altogether. So, you know, Florida is definitely some place we need to keep an eye on in terms of the politics. And, you know, from the very beginning of our show, you know, from the very beginning of the Dreaming of Freedom podcast, we always wanted to make sure that politics, right, we're at the center of what we do, right? You know, history, culture, and politics, we're always at the center of what we do. And so even though we are focusing, of course, on all things Black soccer and MLS, we're always going to stay true to our mission and highlight the bullshit whenever it needs to be highlighted. Okay. You know, and as a wise man once said, this is America, right? So, having said that, one way I'm thinking about transitioning, into the next segment is really thinking about what America means to people outside of the States. Right. And so a lot of, a lot of immigrant communities, right, see and kind of, hold up this narrative about the U.S., right, as this place of opportunity, this place of freedom, right? A lot of immigrants from the Caribbean, a lot of immigrants from Europe, of course, a lot of immigrants from Africa see the States as this kind of place, this beacon of freedom. And in a lot of ways it is, but in a lot of ways it's not, right? However, what we are seeing, particularly in the realm of sports, particularly in the realm of soccer, we're seeing this increase of, you know, African ballers, right, just starting to take over the game. You know, obviously we can talk about their influence in Europe, and but we also see that influence in the U.S. as well, right? We're also starting to see that influence really take off in MLS. And so that's going to be the focus of this show's episode. We really want to, you know, highlight the African continent, the motherland, and you know, definitely big up the continent and the players of African descent, okay? So before we get into our dream team, let's just quickly go over the teams of the week. So for the Eastern Conference, we have Columbus Crew. Columbus Crew is, listen, we talked about them last week, right? Columbus Crew is just balling right now. Unbeaten in 7 games. You know, it's kind of tough because they, you know, they just put on a really, we can talk about that later. I mean, they had a pretty good performance against Inter Miami. We kind of came out with a shock result, so but we could talk about that later. But Columbus Crew unbeaten in 7 games. On match day 22, they beat the New York Red Bulls 2-1. And then match day 23, they again drew to Inter Miami 2-2, which was a hell of a game if you watched it. Did y'all? I'm sure y'all watched a little bit of that Inter Miami game. What y'all think about that?
I watched approximately zero of it, to be honest with you. it was 4th of July. I was doing stuff with my family, man, and I tried. By the end of the day, I was cooked, man. I was done. I was asleep early, and I was getting the alerts on my phone, and I like kind of wake up from my dozing to like, oh, okay, well, we tied it up, sweet. All right, back to bed.
No, that's fair. Yeah, no, I mean, July 4th, you're always out doing stuff with the family. AD, were you able to catch any of it?
I'm not even going to hold you. I did not watch it. I was in the movies when it happened. I'm sorry.
What were you watching?
Spider-Man Across the Universe. I've been seeing too many spoilers. I was like, it's time to just watch this before y'all ruin the movie on social media. But I did replay that Yosef Martinez goal over and over.
Saw that one, yeah.
Over and over.
And I was mad that I didn't see it in the moment because I know my heart would have been pounding and I would have woke my neighbors up.
Yeah, I was definitely concerned. I woke up baby in that moment, just sitting on the couch, like watching this. I'm like, all right, here we go. Another L. And then out of nowhere, man, Joseph Badman with the beautiful scissors kick just lasers it into the back of the net. And shout out to Kompapi too. Great performance by Kompapi, right? The goal and the assist, right? So hopefully both of those players can find their form, and the homegrowns had a great performance as well. So I'm not even sure why we're talking about Inter Miami so much. This is supposed to be Columbus Crew.
Just to touch on Inter Miami real quick, Ian Frey with an assist there at the end. Well, the assist to the assist, I guess. I know it almost counts it as an assist, but Ian Frey, local product, Caribbean background, straight baller, Inter Miami. Remember the name?
And
yes, sir.
And we talked about Ian Frey a couple episodes ago, right? We talked about this man. So y'all need to pay attention, man. Y'all need to pay attention. All right. So Ian Frey is absolutely balling. Man, it's just so fun to just watch him play in all of his glory, right? Just like injury free, God willing. So hopefully he can just stay healthy. Anything else from that game, y'all?
I saw the highlight of Darlington Nagme's score too. That one was definitely impressive.
Absolutely. Yo, his the ball was in the air. So it came off a corner kick. The ball was in the air and you just see Nagme just literally casually walk up to the ball, just take it out of the air, and it just fires past Big Draco, unfortunately. But yeah, Darlington Nagme, brilliant goal. Against Inter Miami, and similarly, Yaya Boa had a very similar banger against New York Red Bulls in match day 22. We also talked about Mo Farsi a couple episodes ago, maybe last episode. Shout out to Mo Farsi. He got the assist for that Yeboah goal. Columbus Crew rather is just having a really great run of games. Again, unbeaten in seven. And of course, we are going to continue to shout out our boy, Wilfred Nancy, right? Dude is just he's just balling right now, man. He's just really balling. And just like to watch him on the sidelines, yo, he's just like smiling. He's like watching his team just ball out. And all he can do is just sit back and just enjoy the beauty that is football, right? And the way he wants his team to play. So shout out to Nancy, shout out to Columbus Crew for what they're doing on that. And again, we'll come back and talk about Yaya Boa and the Dream Team. Because again, the ball was just beautiful. So let's go on to the West. The team of the week for the West, we have LA Galaxy. I imagine if y'all boys didn't watch the Inter Miami game, I imagine y'all didn't watch El Tráfico.
No, I wanted to, man. I can't tell you how much I tried to stay up, but man, like just being in the sun all day, and you know, I was just. I don't know, the thing is, I don't even go hard for the 4th like that, bro. Like, I don't... It's just like, you know, wife, kids, everyone wants to do the 4th of July thing. No, dude, by the end of the day, I was just like, I'm done. Especially with a 2-year-old running around, I was cooked. It was over.
I get it, bro. But it was a good game, man. But we wanted to focus on LA Galaxy, particularly because Douglas Costa and Raheem Edwards, they're just having a really great season. Raheem Edwards got a goal. We'll talk about Raheem Edwards a little bit more in the Dream Team. And Douglas Costa, he got two assists in match day 22 and just had a overall brilliant performance last night against LAFC. Just really out here just balling on that left wing, just really controlling the pace of play. Controlling the game really from the wing position, right? It's kind of amazing to watch. And Tyler Boyd, both Tyler Boyd and Ricky Pooge, right, had two bangers last night. Just nasty, nasty goals. So shout out to LA Galaxy in the El Tráfico. Obviously one of the biggest games in MLS, one of the biggest rivalries in MLS. And it's good to see Douglas Costa contributing in that game, but it's also good to see Raheem Edwards. He didn't get a goal in the El Tráfico, but he still had a great performance. He had this one run where he just takes it from the back as a defender. He just takes it from the back, dribbles through like five LAFC defenders and takes a shot on goal, and it almost goes in. It was an unfortunate finish, but Raheem Edwards is definitely feeling himself these past two games. So I definitely wanted to give a shout out to LA Galaxy and Columbus Crew. Listen. Columbus Crew is slowly becoming my number two team. Like, if it's not for Wilfred Nancy alone, like, and Darlington Nagme, again, a black captain, right? It'll be interesting to go through the MLS team to see how many black captains there are. But Darlington Nagme is one of them, and he's just...
The Liberian legend.
The Liberian, the alliteration. The alliteration is on point. Anyways. He's on fire. But the Liberian legend, yo, he's, yeah, we got to do a footnotes on Nagbe because I'm really interested to explore his national team relationship, right? We talked about Jeremy Obobese, and his relationship with the national team, but I think Nagbe has an even more interesting relationship. But again, we'll get to Nagbe.
Another one who deserves his flowers.
All day. You know, we're always going to give Nagbe and these players their flowers. So again, shout out to Columbus Crew and shout out to LA Galaxy. So for the Dream Team, again, we're combining match days 22 and 23. We'll quickly go through the list of them, and then we'll do a little deep dive on three of them in particular. So the first one we have, we already talked about Yaya Boa playing with Columbus. He's from Ghana, right? So again, we're kind of trying to highlight the African presence in this episode. So Yaya Boa coming from Ghana, and he scored his third goal on the season, right? A banger, and again an assist from Mo Farsi, right? So shout out to both of them and Columbus. That game actually was against New York Red Bulls, and in that game you had Elias Manuel, a Brazilian brother, Afro-Brazilian brother, and that's his second goal on the season. He seems to be finding his groove with New York, and it'll be interesting to see how he can perform going forward, you know, this kind of last third of the season. Anderson Julio from Real Salt Lake, Afro-Ecuadorian. I feel like every episode we're talking about some black Ecuadorians. So maybe that's another footnote segment in the making. But Anderson Julio, Real Salt Lake, coming from Ecuador. It's his second goal of the season, but man, what a time to score. It was a last minute winner in that game. And it was kind of like a scuffle, you know, in the box, you know, a lot of rebounds, a lot of shots, but it ended up on Julio's foot, and he just he did what he was supposed to do, right, and took care of the ball, right? So shout out to Anderson Julio. I'm not sure if I'm shouting out Real Salt Lake because they definitely have some pretty interesting history, ownership history.
No kidding.
Racist history, so yeah. Sexist history, all that. So, yeah, not sure about the club itself, but we're going to shout out Anderson Julio all day, okay? Next up, we have Bernard Kamungo. Bernard Kamungo is a striker for FC Dallas. The brother is from Tanzania. I believe he came to the States while he was in high school, but
middle school.
So yeah, he's coming from Tanzania. AD, did you have anything specific you wanted to add about Bernard?
A little bit. I saw that he grew up at a refugee camp when his parents were escaping the civil war in the Republic of Congo. But he actually quit going to school when he was 11 to sell clothes for money for his family. And he was actually really embarrassed to tell his family about it. So in his spare time, what he would do to like de-stress was he would play soccer in the streets, but they didn't have balls, so they would make balls out of like gloves or condoms with old clothes. And he was like, I'm pretty good at this, I guess. But he never thought that he was gonna like become a pro until he went to the States and he was playing on the team in middle school and then eventually high school. And they were like, yo, you're nice. And he decided to try out for FC Dallas, and junior year of high school, tried out for FC Dallas, and their developmental team called him like the next day, like, yo, we want to sign you. And he's like, all right. And he forewent his senior season of high school, became a pro.
Yo, that's what's up. Shout out to Bernard Kamungo. Fascinating story. We might have to do a little bit more research on Kamungo, maybe even an interview, because his story sounds incredible. And it sounds like there's some a lot of similarities with the other players we'll talk about in the Dream Team. So appreciate that. Appreciate that, AD. And the last two players, we already mentioned them, Raheem Edwards from LA Galaxy. Canadian brother, right, represents the Canadian team, but of course, as many Black Canadians are, he's of Jamaican descent, so we always gonna shout out the Yachties whenever we can. So shout out to Raheem Edwards. It was his first goal of the season, and I believe it was a header. I believe it was a header off of a corner kick or off of a cross into the box. But he found the ball and just directed it cleanly into the back of the net. So shout out to Raheem, first of the season. Also, I don't think I knew this, but LA Galaxy, like their phrase or like their saying is G's up. And that's probably the dopest saying since in MLS.
When?
I don't know. I saw Raheem Edwards tweet it out. Like, yo, G's up. I'm like, yo, that is amazing. Yo.
I like that.
Of course, yo, that's brilliant. It's brilliant. Also shout out to Black Galaxy? Someone
Black Galaxy,
someone
yeah.
Black Galaxy fans.
Yeah. I think that's their handles, right?
Yeah.
They're brand new. Cool. Anyway, sorry. We're completely botching this. Yeah. So they are new
Black Galaxy fans, yes.
Thank you, Kelly.
Comets and, SC, they call themselves.
There you go. That's what I was thinking of. Comets SC. And they are
Comets for the Galaxy? What?
It's perfect, bro. It's perfect. God. It's perfect. And they are obviously the newest Black supporter group on the MLS scene. So we definitely wanna give them their love. Again, so we got Comets SC, we got Black Herons. Who else? We got Black Fires,
Rose Room Collective,
Footy Mob, Rose Room Collective. So it's growing, right? It's
Black
growing.
Diamonds,
Black Diamonds, and the championship, right?
Yeah.
So we're growing. So it's
Featherstone,
always
Featherstone. Sorry, I'm
Featherstone, of course, out there with Forward Madison in League One. So yeah, definitely. It's great to see this. This cohort of Black SG just building, right? It's exciting to watch. So definitely, if y'all are listening, if y'all need any support, if y'all need anything going forward, you have a friend in Black Herons at the Dreaming of Freedom podcast. So shout out to Raheem Edwards, Comets, LA Galaxy, all that. And lastly, of course, Darlington Nagbe, who scored not in match day 22, but scored in match day 23 against our beloved Inter Miami. Born in Liberia, as Callie reminded us, the Liberian legend. Born in Liberia. Never forget.
His dad was captain of the Liberian national team. Fun fact.
That is a fun fact. That is a fascinating fun fact, actually. And now he's the captain of Columbus Crew, right? So he's definitely just a joy to watch. An OG in the game, right? Like someone in one of the group chats, like, yo, Nagbe has to be like 50 years old. Right? Like, yeah, probably is, but the man is still balling. Like, he's just so calm. He's just so composed in that center defensive midfielder position. And I would argue, and I mean, I think others have argued that he is probably one of the best, if not the best, center defensive midfielder that the country has produced. So Darlington Nagbe, shout out to him all day, because he continues to impress. And again, Columbus Crew, Black coach, Black captain. You can't ask for, I mean, I guess you can ask for a lot more, but we'll start with that. We'll take that. We'll take whatever we can get. All right. So that is the majority of our Dream Team roster. Now we're going to focus on three of them. So let's start with Frank Boley, and we've talked about Frank Boley in the past, but AD, you want to take Frank?
Yeah, he, I would say, is another candidate for an interview, because there is not that much information on this brother, but he's from Cote d'Ivoire. He just signed on to Portland this season. He's got 6 goals in 14 games, so he's doing pretty well. The goal that he just scored on Saturday was, I don't want to say it was a display of pace and power, but that's what it looked like. But he tucked it under the goalkeeper's armpit. It was nice. But that was his fifth goal in 10 games. He's coming along. He's starting to fit into the Portland Timbers team, which is, as we've said before, a very black team. But he comes from the Hungarian side Ferencváros, which is the champion side for the last 4 years since 2019 in the Hungarian league. Before that, and he was on that team for all 4 years. And before that, he was on the Norwegian side, Stabæk, and he was the top goal scorer there. So this man has been producing for a minute. He's 29 years old. I don't understand why we don't have more information on the guy. This man seems like a prime candidate for deserves his flowers.
All day. Yeah, I mean, yeah, dude is a goal scorer. Yo, and sometimes, you know, of course, as a black podcast, we don't wanna perpetuate these stereotypes, but sometimes it is about pace and power. Like sometimes the boy just
so fast.
Yo, I mean sometimes it is what it is. Yeah, like it just is what it is. But no, Frank Bowley is having a great season. I think it's his first season, right? He just got to Portland earlier in the season.
Yeah, it's his first year. So
that's probably why we don't see a lot of information. But you know, as he continues to ball out, as he continues to score these goals, hopefully, his story will get more shine, right? And I think while he was in Hungary, right, what was that? 84 appearances, 28 goals, right? So very productive player. As AD said, it's his fifth goal in what, 10 matches, I think AD said. You know, let's definitely keep an eye out on Frank Bowley. And again, we've talked about Frank Bowley previous episodes, right? So this dude he's definitely feeling himself. Definitely seemed like he's getting more comfortable in the league. So shout out to Frank Bowley. Next up, we have Dominique or Dom Baji, who plays for FC Cincinnati. And Dom Baji, yo, this dude had a brace. This dude had a brace in match day 22. So shout out to him. He also had an own goal, but whatever. We won't talk about that. It was just a fluke own goal, but whatever. But Dom Baji, born in Dakar, Senegal, okay, and around when he was 15, he ended up moving to Tanzania, shout out to Kamungo, with his pops, and then to Zimbabwe. Shortly thereafter, he moved to the U.S., where he played soccer for Boston University, and then went on to be selected in the 60s as the 67th pick in the 2015 MLS Super Draft, of course, by the Colorado Rapids. He would spend his first 3.5 seasons in MLS with the Rapids before being traded to FC Dallas. Again, shout out to Kamungo. He then spent time with Nashville when they became an expansion side, and then back to Colorado before finally signing with Cincinnati for this. I think it was back in 2022, or maybe it was 2023, where again he's on pace to really having his best season since 2018. In 2018, he put up 9 goals. That's his highest goal scoring tally. So we'll see, right? I think he has 5 on the season now, with about a third of the season left. So we'll see if he can match that. But you know, Dominique Baji, he just seems like a really good guy. I mean, when you watch interviews, when you read his story, he just sounds like just a nice guy to be around, right? Similar to Kamungo's story, right? He talks about growing up in Senegal, playing with the rags, right? Playing with the plastic bags, as soccer balls, right? And this is a very common practice throughout the continent, right? Where players, because of a lack of resources, they innovate, right? They get creative, right? And they put together their own pitches. They put together their own balls and goals, and they make it work, right? And so when Baji was also in Dakar when Senegal made it to the 2002 World Cup. Okay, so that's when he said, you know, it was that moment when everything became real for him, right? Like the dream of becoming a professional footballer became real in 2002 when the whole country stopped, right, to watch Senegal play in that World Cup, right? And their first game, they beat France, right? Who were the defending champions at the time. So he talks about the, you know, that experience and just, you know, how that kind of lit the fire for him to really want to be a professional footballer. So shout out to Don Badji. Again, just a really great guy, man. And shout out to Cincinnati, right? Who is balling out this season. Right, like just two seasons ago, they were like dead last in the Eastern Conference. You know, actually, they were dead last in the entire league. I think in 2021,
they were like perennial wooden spoon champions,
bro. Like it was terrible. I think like the team right above them were like 8 points clear of Cincinnati. Yeah,
they had a couple really bad ones, but I think it's important to mention that, like, and I think it's. I think it just goes back onto what we were talking about earlier, how so many of these players are coming from such humble backgrounds, man, and what it takes for them just to be here and get an opportunity. Man, like, what's beautiful about MLS, and you find it sometimes within, like, the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, and all that stuff, but I feel like we see these on a more perennial level in MLS, that we see guys going through what some of these guys have gone through and getting here and finally getting their shot, you know? So I think it's cool that, you know, we're, like, us, as we're studying this, we're learning this every week, you know? It's crazy how this started as just like we wanted to highlight black players excelling in MLS, but when you dig into each of them, there's such an incredible story and like what it took for them to get to that point, to have that moment, you know. And sometimes we learn about them for the first time, but a lot of the times we're seeing a guy that we're changing the narrative from a guy who's a good football player to a guy who's overcome some pretty incredible things to get this moment. So, you know, just the beauty of I think of what we're doing, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but I think it's so awesome that we get to highlight and share some of these stories, which is why we need to, you know, continue sharing these stories and looking into these stories and learning these stories. And hopefully now in the future, we'll be able to get some of these guys on. So,
yeah, absolutely. Big pat on the back. Damn it. Shit, where are our flowers? God damn it. but yo, hopefully, you know, that's the next evolution of the podcast, where we're actually getting these interviews, locking them in and really, you know, helping spread those stories and share those stories of these players that really deserve their stories to be told. So definitely shout out to Don Badji. He's just having a great season, and it's good to see him kind of find his goal scoring form again. So lastly, we'll talk about Bongokule Longwane. That was nice. Yeah,
nailed
you,
it.
Thank you. Longwane is a South African brother playing for Minnesota United. And again, as Callie said, you know, humble beginnings. So he was born in Pietermaritzburg, South Africa. And I'll come back to the significance of Pietermaritzburg in a second, but just to stick with Longwane, dude is absolutely balling this year in terms of his personal performance. Last season, he only had two goals on the entire season. This season, Longwane already has five goals with Minnesota, right? Again, I think they have about 15 more matches to play. So we'll see how much, you know, he can rack up. And it's not just his goal scoring, right? He has a number of assists on the season, which is similar to last year or last season as well. And his impact on the pitch is felt even when he's not scoring or not contributing to goals, right? Just his presence on the field, on the wing, he's constantly attacking, always looking forward. He talks about how he plays different from most players, right? He's a very fun player to watch, right? He's not afraid to bring some style and some sauce to the pitch. And he's talked about how he wants to express himself, right? Stylistically, as a South African, right? But while also, you know, respecting, right? Like respecting the game itself, right? And so he's definitely helped Minnesota in their playoff run this year. They currently sit in 11th place in the Western Conference, but only 1 point away from a playoff spot. So hopefully Bongi can keep up his goal scoring form. And again, Minnesota United is just kind of, it's fun to see these teams that, you know, really aren't associated with kind of historic success, kind of find some of their footing this season, right? So shout out to Bongi and Minnesota United. So that was our dream team segment, and we're gonna stick with this, theme of the African influence in U.S. soccer by quickly talking about our footnote segment, which we'll look at. Of course, if you talk about Black soccer in the U.S., of course we're gonna talk about Atlanta. It just seems like Atlanta is at the heart of all things Black soccer in the U.S. and this is no different. So let's start with the Atlanta Chiefs. Of course, the Atlanta Chiefs were one of the inaugural clubs for the North American Soccer League, which started in 1968. And Phil Woosnam, who was a former player for West Ham and Aston Villa, he was like a player coach, right, for Atlanta Chiefs. But Phil Woosnam was like a visionary in terms of. In terms of the U.S. game, right? He was interested in recruiting international players, really developing the game domestically, but through this kind of international talent, right? So in 1967, in the National Premier Soccer League, which is the precursor to the NASL, essentially, Woosnam and the Chiefs went on to sign four Zambians. This is in 1967, folks, okay? As well as the Ghanaian, Willie Evans. Okay, so five Africans are on this team in Atlanta in the late 1960s, and they are effective, right? They are producing, right? They're not just token players. So those four Zambians were Freddie Mwila, Emmett Kempengwe, Howard Mikuta, and Sammy Zoom. Probably my favorite name of all, Sammy Zoom. And again, all of these players were absolute ballers, okay? So in 1968, the Atlanta Chiefs won the NASL championship, which was, again, the first season of the league. And during the 1968 season, right, that same season, the Atlanta Chiefs played, shout out to AD, they played Manchester City. And they beat them twice, okay? The Atlanta Chiefs beat Manchester City twice in 1968. Now, if you don't know the history about Manchester City, this is when Manchester City is top of the league. I think they're top of the league at this very moment, actually. And they go on to win the league, I believe it's in 68 or 69, right? With their coach, Malcolm Allison. So this is when City is kind of like experiencing their first kind of real success. And they come to the States, as many European clubs did at the time, for these kind of, summer tours. And they play Atlanta Chiefs, and Atlanta beats them on their first their first game, 3-2, right? And who scores in that match? Freddie Mwila, the Zambian, and a young South African by the name of Kaiser Motaung. And we'll talk about Kaiser shortly. So they beat Man City 3-2. After that game, the coach for Manchester City, Malcolm Allison, essentially is complaining, right, finding excuses. Oh, you know, this person was offside and the refs were terrible, blah, blah, blah. So he basically requests a rematch. So they play a second game and Atlanta beats that ass again, 2-1. And again, Freddie and Kaiser both score a goal, right? So both of them scored goals in both of those games, right? Against European glory at the time in Manchester City. Right? And those two players, Kaiser Motaung and Freddie Mwila, they would go on and have a major impact, not just on the U.S. game, but of course for the significance of African football on a global scale, right? So Mwila and Emmett Kipwenge, who was one of the four Zambians to play for Atlanta, would go on to be the first Zambians to actually play for Aston Villa, right, in England, right? So I think they spent their first two seasons with Atlanta and then went over to England to play for Aston Villa, while Kaiser Motuang was a baller in his early NASL career, right? So in his first season in 1968, he racked up the Rookie of the Year award, and the next season, right, in 1969, he was the top goal scorer for the North American Soccer League, right? So Kaiser Motuang is definitely a legend in American soccer history, but also South African football history, right? When he returned to South Africa, he formed the Kaiser Chiefs, okay? Obviously, you're seeing the Atlanta Chiefs connection. So he creates the Kaiser Chiefs back in South Africa, where they have become the most successful club in South African football in history. I think they've won more trophies than any other South African football club since 1970, right, which was the beginning of the Premier League in South Africa. So, Kaiser Motuang is just an absolute legend for U.S. soccer, but also, again, for the influence of African players throughout the globe. The African influence in U.S. soccer runs deep, and it seems like we're seeing a renaissance of sorts in this 2023 season, right? And of course, last week we gave Kai Kamara his flowers, so we always want to, we always want to shout out the diaspora, we always want to shout out the continent when we can. And of course, one of my favorite players, Didier Drogba, who did he play for? Was it Montreal? Was it Montreal?
Yeah,
that he played
it was
for?
Montreal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Drogba was just, OG. So,
and shout out Phoenix Rising, USL.
Shout out Phoenix Rising. Yo, I don't know how he ended up. I don't know how that ended up. But doesn't he have like an ownership stake in it? Or is that
now?
Let's make
that
up. Okay, now he does. Okay.
I'm missing something here.
Did I just make that up?
Didier Drogba played for Phoenix Rising?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's new. Yeah. I'm listening to you say this, I'm like, no, that didn't happen.
No, it can't.
And then 13 goals in 21 games.
I'm telling you. We got to bring my boy on who was in Arizona for a while, who watched him. Nice.
He scored 21 in 33 with Montreal too. That guy scored for fun, bro. That guy's a definition of scoring for
sure.
Fun. I thought you were about to say I gotta bring my boy on Didier. Come on, my dad.
Yeah, just gonna casually name drop Didier Drogba.
I'm like, Jesus,
look
bro.
Me, Louis.
Right. Yeah, shout out to Dan Levitard all day. Callie, AD, y'all got anything else for this episode? Again, we just want to shout out our African continent, our African brothers, and even the players of African descent, right? We talked about Hani Mukhtar last episode. He represents Germany, right? But he has that Sudanese connection. So there's hella players, right? Darlington Nagbe represents the U.S., but the Liberian legend, right? So there's a lot of players out here that have these African roots, and we definitely just wanted to give them their flowers while we can. So AD, Cali, anything else?
I just want to say that y'all know so much, and I just like listening. It's great.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man.
That boy Cali was bringing out the facts today. I'm like, God damn, boy. Jesus.
Oh, man. Yeah, I do quite a bit of reading, but both fortunately and unfortunately, because fortunately because I learn, unfortunately because I learn, But, man, it's crazy that this all happens around the 4th of July, man, when we're supposed to celebrate and get all patriotic and all that stuff, man. And we can put on the mask and say that America's the greatest country in the world and all that stuff. But that's just not the reality for every person that lives here. And I think something that needs to be established is that you can have love for your country while still demanding more from it and still expecting more from it. you know, and people give me crap about not being very patriotic, or, you know, and I get told the whole comment of like, oh, you hate America. It's like, I don't hate America. I just want better from it. You know, I want better for everybody. I want true equity. I want true equality. I want true inclusion. I want true diversity. I want, you know, I want us to be an actual melting pot, because nobody's fucking from here, bro. There's no such thing as an American. While all our roots trace back, whether you come from the Caribbean, South America, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, Asia, wherever it is, nobody's from here, bro. And this country was founded by a bunch of rich white dudes that wanted to pay less taxes. Like, get that through your head. You know, I can go into the transatlantic slave trade, and that can be a whole different episode, but I'm not going to do that. History teacher Callie will not be doing that today, but just read a little bit, guys. Read a little bit. I will recommend a book. Damn it. I freaking name it right now. Shit, I just finished reading it.
Is it The Half Has Never Been Told?
The Half Has Never Been Told. I literally just got done reading it. It literally ties in the American economy and Americans' version of capitalism with slavery and how those two things exist together. All right, and I'm not going to go off and I'm not going off on another tangent. I'm just saying, read the damn book. All right, just read the fucking book.
Read the damn book. Yeah, Callie's about to take us to class. So let's end there before Callie.
I'll stop.
You know, starts the next lecture. Goddamn. But all right, y'all. Callie, AD, appreciate y'all again as always. And that concludes this episode. So we are signing off and see y'all next week. Peace.
Later, guys.
Peace.